one thing to get drafted. It's another thing to get to a second contract. There's a lot of stepping stones and learning you have to go through that, especially in younger years. And then just doing the same thing day in, day out. Hopefully it pays off and you're doing the right things. And then being in the front office, showing belief in me that I was doing the right things. And I told Bean I went from proving everybody wrong and now I got to start proving everybody right. So I look forward to that.
Bills offensive tackle Spencer Brown getting a contract extension, noting that it is a big deal, not just to get drafted, but also to get that second contract. That means that you show value to a team, and that's a big deal.
It is, especially from him, who really bounced back last season compared to his season before, the sophomore slump. So it's good to see him getting it, his well-deserved contract, and hopefully he continues to play up from there at this point.
Now, Bruce Nolan is going to be coming up here. But it's time to twist the bottle cap off a little bit. And that's how I'm going to bring Bruce in here.
Okay. Just to let it bubble out the cap a little bit?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm getting really sick of the Xavier Worthy thing. I'm really getting sick of it to the point where I have to fight back. And it's time to actually tell people enough is enough. Stop letting Kansas City live in your heads rent-free. And I wrote about this after the draft, and here we are having to revisit the same damn thing. And we go to the Western Hotline. We bring in Bruce Nolan. And I gave Bruce a little bit of a precursor that we might bring this up today. That here we are, 5 months later, Bruce, having to bring up the same damn thing about Xavier Worthy and the Kansas City trade and blah, 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 blah.
I suspect it will be that way for some time. I would love to be able to tell you that through our evaluative discussion today that we will solve that and it will never come up again. But I think provable link that will exist between Keon Coleman and Xavier Leggett and Xavier Worthy, specifically Worthy and Coleman, for a very, very long time. We're going to do our best and we're going to fight the good fight, but I think this might be a recurring topic.
It probably will be, and that means, the term for it was called the Worthy Wars, and wars don't go away after just one weekend.
No,
so
there are many battles within a
we're
war.
We're in this for a while, Bruce.
Yes, we are, and you kind of thought that was going to be the case when it happened at the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And my entire stance around it has always been that this is a little bit closer to the Aaron Maben, Brian Arakpo situation than it is to anything else, but we're making it bigger than that. Mm-hmm. In reality, this is just about whether or not the Bills pick the better player.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it boils down to, because all reports are that the Panthers were going to take Leggett regardless, and that the Bills weren't as high on Worthy as they were on Coleman, which means they could have stayed in that exact same order and had it been Coleman and then Leggett and then Xavier Worthy. And when you look at it, it's really about, you know, did you take the better player? But we're making it bigger than that. This is much more of a Maben or Rockpo situation where it's the same player at the same position, specifically the position of need, that is talked about and talked about and talked about and ranked about and ranked about. And I had Worthy higher than Coleman, too. So I'm in that boat 100%. But what it is we're taking it and we're making it one step bigger than that by saying that there was an enablement situation. This is not the Chiefs trading up for Patrick Mahomes, where Patrick Mahomes was going to go before the Chiefs picked. This is not what that is. All reports are it was probably going to be almost identical as far as wide receiver to team, regardless of the order that they went in. For us, it's not about enablement. For me, it's by all means, let's get mad, but let's get mad about the right thing. And the right thing, in my opinion, is did they pick the right player? And the truth is, we're not going to know that for a while. There's this whole thing called sample size, and it resets when players come to the NFL. As I mentioned, I had Xavier Worthy higher than Keon Coleman, too. But that doesn't really matter. Now they're in the NFL, and now we start over. So now we sit down and we say, okay, well, sample size. Apparently, sample size is like two plays for us to lose our minds.
Oh.
So for me, yep. It's let's be mad about the right thing, but let's be mad about the right thing at the appropriate time.
Thank you, Bruce, as you always do. I know that I can come to you to make sure to put it in a more concise way that I wish that I could. I'm going to be more angry and emotional about it, but you're going to be the one to bring the logic and inject that into my brain because I can't get there by myself.
It's really been an emotional couple of days, and you just kind of sit around and you wonder if it's going to blow up, right? And then if Xavier Worthy has one big play or two big plays or three big plays, what's that going to look like when Hollywood Brown comes back? Like, is Xavier Worthy's snap count going to go down? What's Keon Coleman's share going to look like? There's just a lot of unknowns, and we want to jump to the conclusion because we want it to be over. Like, we want the thing to be done. We want the right answer immediately, and we don't want to say, well, let's sit around and wait because there's sample size. We don't want to do that. We just want to jump to the conclusion, and if we're already panicked, then everything we see is just reinforcing that panic. Like, if you felt that way on draft day, you probably felt that way on Thursday night because you already felt that way. You just needed something to reinforce it, and you got that. But deep breath, sample size, not saying it's not going to turn out that the Bills pick the wrong guy. That absolutely could happen, but we're not going to know for a little bit.
Bruce Nolan on the Wester Hotline here. Bruce, let's just turn to something better. The Bills play an actual football game that has meaning in the standings tomorrow. We're here. We have one more day that we have to deal with talking about other things that aren't the game itself.
Speculation.
Speculation or predictions or anything like that. Now we get to finally react for real on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals. Bruce, there's a lot of questions going in regarding safety. DeMar Hamlin's going to be starting against Arizona next to Taylor Rapp. The questions, of course, at wide receiver that are in no doubt fan the flames of Thursday night, of course. And, of course, the biggest thing being, well, what's this team actually going to be able to look like? Because we didn't get a look at the starters for more than, what, six plays combined in the preseason?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is, I think you're going to see something a little bit more closely related to the reports you saw come out of camp than you would the preseason, specifically when it comes to the offense. And I think that you saw Joe Brady play the best he could with someone else's hand last year, with Ken Dorsey's playbook. And when you switch play callers in the middle of the season, you're not switching playbooks. And so sometimes I think people don't understand, we switched play callers last year, but we didn't switch play books until the offseason. And so now, instead of seeing play caller A with playbook B, you're seeing play caller A with playbook A. And so that's going to be different. I think you saw a lot of shifting, a lot of motion, some compressed formations. I think you saw a lot of that in training camp and the reports coming out about what it was going to look like. And then you basically didn't see any of that with the first team offense in the preseason. I think how much play action you run is going to matter. I think that really it's going to be about how many easy buttons does Joe Brady press for Josh Allen. One of the big criticisms for Ken Dorsey is that there weren't a lot of easy buttons. The play action rate was low. The shift rate was low. The motion rate was low. You saw the splits from Jordan Love last night. Jordan Love with motion and Jordan Love without motion. And one of the things I think you're going to see start to trend toward the NFL is that play action isn't the only easy button there is for a quarterback. And so although I do want the play action rate to be higher, if the motion rate is a lot higher, then that'll be a W too. And so I do think that you're going to see what Joe Brady's quote-unquote playbook looks like, and we have very little idea aside from the reports coming out of training camp about what that's going to look like. I think one of the other things that it's going to be interesting to see is with the departure of Matt Milano, and the last time we, quote-unquote, saw Dorian Williams at linebacker, the Bills didn't trust him enough in a playoff game against Kansas City. I mean, they'd rather call somebody out of a family vacation in A.J. Klein and throw him on the field than they would to trust Dorian Williams against Patrick Mahomes. That says something. So if you see a lot of Dorian Williams, is he somebody who's looked like he's taken the next step as far as instincts, recognition, football IQ, coverage ability, things like that? Him being able to chase down a ball carrier was never in question. It was the other stuff. And if you don't see a lot of Dorian Williams, if you see a lot of more three safety sets, then that tells us what they think of Dorian Williams a little bit. So I do think that those are two interesting questions. What's the playbook going to look like? And then are you comfortable leaving Dorian Williams, what you've seen from his development, are you comfortable leaving him out there with the Matt Milano snaps? I think those are the two things that I'm interested to see, especially because you have a rookie second-round safety that you think was probably better as like an overhang defender initially in his infancy as an NFL player. You think maybe he's better closer to the line of scrimmage. Maybe you end up with three safety looks. So how much does Dorian Williams play? Is it 100% of his snaps, basically like Matt Milano? And then on the offensive side, what kind of easy buttons get pressed for Josh Allen by Joe Brady?
Absolutely. Now just taking a quick look, you mentioned Dorian Williams on the defensive side of the ball. Bobby Babich, the defensive coordinator, is going to be calling plays where Coach McDermott was doing that last season. And a lot of people were big fans of how McDermott called the defense. A lot more aggressive than Leslie Frazier was. Got some pressure back there. Where do you think Bobby Babich is? Is it going to be a sweet spot between the two? Is it going to be more aggressive? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think people kind of make this assumption with Bobby Babich that Sean McDermott is his only defensive influence, right? And if you look at Bobby Babich's track record, that's not true as far as his own defensive influence. And so I would be surprised if Babich's defensive play calling looked more like Leslie Frazier. I would be much less surprised if it looked more like Sean McDermott's last year. And I would be surprised if someone with that kind of juice, that kind of energy, just as a personality, all of a sudden becomes crazily passive when it comes to the actual play calling on the defensive side. Like, I'd be surprised by that. So I would just expect, based on what we know about Babich, what we know about his base influences, and also what we saw from Sean McDermott last year, I'd be surprised if it wasn't a slightly more aggressive style of play call.
Bruce Nolan with the Bruce Exclusive joining us here on the Westerner Hotline. Bruce, one of the big things that we all know heading into the season was buy your Dalton Kincaid stock, buy in the Khalil Shakir stock. The day is coming. How much of that stock do you think people get to cash in on with Kincaid, with Shakir, and what you can expect from them heading into a pivotal season for the both of them?
As a proud Dalton Kincaid fantasy manager, I have put my money where my mouth is when it comes to Dalton Kincaid. I do think that the pump is primed for Dalton Kincaid to get 115 targets this year. I think that that's within the realm of reasonable possibility. And Khalil Shakir is going to be a player that I think Josh Allen trusts. And I think people kind of think that he's something that he not. I think people kind of have this idea that he's some sort of, you know, scrappy, less athletic, quicker than fast, you know, try hard slot guy. Like, I think that's kind of all they think he is. And I do think that the skill set is more significant than that. I was a huge fan of Khalil Shakir coming out of Boise State. And one of the things that I mentioned on Twitter that people kind of thought was funny was that he's always just one step faster than you think he is, right? Because you don't think of him as this gigantic burner. A guy ran in the low 4.4s at the combine and has enough to be able to be explosive in the middle of the field. We saw some big plays from him last year, and I think that low center of gravity, there's a level of toughness to his game that I think Josh Allen appreciates. Obviously, the catch radius is something that you can't really do anything about, right? Khalil Shakir has extremely short arms, and that creates a little bit more necessity to be able to separate from man coverage and be able to not have that margin of error as opposed to a player like Keon Coleman, right? But I do think he's a really good player, and I don't think that the Bills' receiving core is better than last year. Like, I'm not going there. But I don't think it's the worst thing ever that's ever happened to a team. And I do think that when you have the offensive line in place that played really well last year and you lost Mitch Morse, but, you know, David Edwards is no slouch in this, you know, in this league, and he has experience with Aaron Cromer. He slides into left guard. Connor McGovern moves over to center. I think you have a solid offensive line and a great offensive line coach. And I think that if Joe Brady is a little creative, we can kind of make up for any loss of talent from Diggs and Gabe Davis walking out the door. So for me, I think it's good enough, but I think Kincaid is the cherry on top. I think if you can consistently funnel your offense through a reliable tight end for short and intermediate targets, they trusted him to run intermediate routes against man coverage. And that's not a common thing in the NFL to trust rookie tight ends doing. I think that the sky's the limit. I think he can be a top five tight end, and I think it starts on Sunday.
Bruce, of course, if you've known enough about me at this point, like me, Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, we kind of started the Khalil Shakir hive the moment the man was drafted. Zach had us buying in, and so we're very much ready for this, especially with Shakir. You mentioned Kincaid and breaking it down, like intermediate man coverage snaps, like that's something you don't ask of any tight end ever. That's something that's typically reserved for what, like those top three, top five guys at the position. Now you're looking at a chance that the Bills have some legit weaponry that people aren't really prepared for, I would say. Not prepared for, but like they're not mentally ready for it. The fan bases, I should say. I'd hope the teams are ready for it. But anyway, Bruce, of course, when it comes to the gauntlet, these first five games of the Bills, this one probably looks like the one that you should win right away, even though the Bills have had a tendency every now and then to trip over their own feet in the opener.
Yeah, I think that with the schedule looking as tough as it looks, now is not the season to trip over your feet and have a game week one like you had last year against the New York Jets, and for Josh Allen to come out, you know, with the zoomies. I think Mina Kimes and Ben Solak from ESPN were on a podcast where they were joking around that Josh Allen, like your dog when he gets to go outside or you get home for the first time, he gets the zoomies when you get home and needs to calm down, which I thought was a hilarious metaphor. But now is not the time for Josh Allen to get the zoomies because you have Aaron Rodgers back with the Jets. You have a reinforced Miami team that brought back a lot of meaningful pieces on the offense, extended them out, kind of settled in for another year of that, and you know that they're going to probably blow the doors off a lot of lesser teams. And so now is not the time to slip and fall. Even if it is against an NFC team, now is not the time to come out and kind of fall on your face week one. And I think it's about being in control. It's about being in control of the offense. And I think that the best thing Brady can do early on with Josh Allen is to scheme easy for him, right? Scheme easy, scheme binaries for him, this or this, high, low, levels concepts, you know, RPOs, a lot of binaries to allow him to not get frantic. And I think that's one of the things I want to see early on against the Cardinals to keep that from happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe Brady, hopefully, will do simple better. Just taking a look now at the AFC East as a whole, there's a lot of talk with the Jets, maybe with that, you know, lower placing schedule, taking the cake at the one seed in the AFC East. Where are your thoughts, I guess, with the Dolphins still being there as well? I mean, Tua got that contract extension, right? So both teams are contenders. People are putting the AFC East all over the place. The Bills are not the favorite. What's your take on that?
I have been a fairly significant ardent Tua defender for a long time. I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's a level of creation that you expect from your elite level top three quarterbacks in the NFL right now. I do think that the NFL is such that the system can get you 80% of the way, but there are going to be five or six plays a game that you need to create offense on your own, and I don't think that's what he does. But I do think that he operates that system at an extremely high level, and I think that the idea that you could just plug anybody into it and get the same level of results is probably not true based on historical precedent. So for me, I think that Miami, until I see otherwise, Miami is the threat to the Buffalo Bills. Expecting Aaron Rodgers to come out and give you elite-level quarterback play, I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but people think that somehow it's just the injury, but it's the injury, and he's 40, and he wasn't elite his last season with the Packers. Like, it wasn't like he was coming off the back-to-back MVPs. We talk about it like it was yesterday. It was 4 years ago for Aaron Rodgers, where you had back-to-back MVP-level play. And so he kind of dropped off a little bit before he got traded to the Jets. And then he got hurt. And now he's 40. And it's a different offensive scheme. And it's not, you know, it's Nathaniel Hackett. And so for me, it's going to be Miami as the threat until I see otherwise. And I understand that the Jets have kind of run it back and they've said, well, what if we didn't have quarterback problems? Are we 100% sure that Aaron Rodgers is going to just go back to being a top five quarterback? Because I'm not there yet. I'm not saying he's not going to be better than Zach Wilson, but I think you need multiple iterations better than Zach Wilson. in order to compete with Miami and Buffalo for the AFC East. So I believe he can do it. But if you ask me from a probability standpoint, it's still going to go Buffalo, Miami, and then the Jets.
Yeah, somehow he still made the top 100 players after only playing like four snaps last year. So we'll have to wait. We'll have to wait and see on that. But just a crazy, crazy thought to me that Aaron Rodgers is going to come back. But no, I can see that for sure.
Yeah.
Bruce, one last thing for you. I'm sure it's something that that everyone wants to know, and it's more or less this. How do you think this game's going down tomorrow?
I think the Bills are going to win tomorrow. I do. One of my things that gives me a little bit of confidence this game versus previous kind of stinkers in week one is that just without looking it up, name me a meaningful player in the Cardinals front seven. Anybody? Bueller? the Arizona Cardinals front seven is not the same as the Jets or the Steelers when the Buffalo Bills had struggle with them early. And it's not the same. And so what you need to do is you need to institute Josh Allen to panic, right? Like, you have to give him the zoomies. He doesn't walk out the door with the zoomies. You have to give him the zoomies. And I don't think that Arizona has the horses in the front seven to be able to generate that level of panic. And if you don't generate that level of panic, then I do think you can get a spot where you're forcing Kyler Murray, and the Cardinals' run game is good. Like, the Cardinals' running offense is good, and James Conner was low-key one of the most effective backs in football last year. And I think that if you can jump up on that early and you can kind of take a little bit of that away, then you're going to force Kyler Murray and Jonathan Gannon into a lot of expected passing situations, which I'm not saying Kyler Murray is a good quarterback. He is. But it kind of forces you to do left-handed work. And you can't lean into the strength of your team. And so I think the weakness of the Arizona Cardinals actually stops them from being able to lean into the strength of the Cardinals. And that's the reason why I think the Bills are going to come away with W.
You said don't look it up. And then I went and looked it up because I didn't know. And now you've got me feeling quite arrogant because who are these people?
I told you, like, I know the front seven of the Cardinals. It's just they've struggled to get impact players. I mean, there's a reason why even a couple years ago they gave Jordan Phillips 3 years and $30 million, right? Yeah. Because they wanted him to come up be an impact player, right? They drafted Zaven Collins, who finally found a role last year, and they've managed to get the best out of him as a former first round pick. But it wasn't like he came in and was like a stellar player. Like, he became a good, reasonable player just last year. And I'm glad that the defensive system actually finally utilized him for once, because coming out of Tulsa, I was like, okay, you know, hey, there's something there, but he wasn't being utilized correctly. And they don't have a lot of impact players on that front seven. And I think that when your best defender is a safety, right? And I think that's probably not going to be enough to give Josh Allen the level of panic you need for him to get the zoomies.
Yeah, I would agree with you here. I would also expect a nice little dose of James Cook, Ray Davis in here, because the Bills' offensive line last year, as we saw, especially when Brady took over, when they started changing up the play calling of the run game, that was when you started seeing a lot more of the success, and the offensive line was one of the best at run blocking throughout. Hopefully we can go ahead and get rid of the fear bunker that the preseason created, but I think there's a nice little healthy dosage of the running game in this there as well, Bruce.
If you really want to keep Josh Allen from getting the zoomies, I mean, you have a Dallas playbook for that, where you just run the ball a bajillion times and go, hey, well, I mean, it's working, so let's just go ahead and keep doing it. A lot harder for him to get the zoomies if he's handing the ball off a lot, so I wouldn't be complaining if that ends up being the case, as long as the W happens.
Exactly. All right, Bruce, enjoy your Bills game day tomorrow. Thank you, as always, for joining us, and I cannot wait to talk to you again.
Sounds good, folks. Thanks for having me.